Welcome to the podcast of MotorWeek, television's original automotive magazine. MotorWeek is made possible by RockAuto.com. Here's your host, John Davis.
And welcome to MotorWeek podcast number 68. I am John Davis. Joining us today in Studio C are our road test producer and two-wheeling reporter, Brian Robinson.
Hello, John.
And our over-the-edge reporter, Stephen Chupnik.
Hey, hey.
And our world traveler, I might add. Okay, we've got our, we've got our lightning round. We're going to look at our MotorWeek mailbag. But first, we're going to talk about a few of the new cars that have passed through our way. Toyota's newest and smallest Prius, the newest member of the modern Buick clan, and the Lexus supercar, the LFA. Okay, let me set this up. First car we're going to talk about is the Toyota Prius C. That's C for city. This is the smallest member of the Prius clan. Goes on sale this spring. 53 mile per gallon city highway, fuel economy rating, which is the highest of any non-plug-in vehicle, so really the highest of anything with an internal combustion engine and no big battery. A subcompact in overall size, 500 pounds lighter than the normal Prius. And with that, I'll turn it over to our panelists. What do you guys, what's your first impression of the Prius C?
I know I saw it last year in New York when they first debuted it. And I really liked the look of it.
Why?
Compared to the regular Prius, mm-hmm. which I guess maybe it's not that I've gotten used to it, but it was just something different. It was something that I said, wow, Toyota actually did something to attract another group of hybrid or fuel-efficient drivers.
Well, it has a bit of a Prius snout, but is it that it's taller or what do you think? It does look different.
I think it looks just a little sportier than mm-hmm. The V is not really meant to look like that. Right. That's the bigger one. But the regular, it just looks sportier. It looks more fun to drive. And that's the first thing that I noticed. And then, you know, I think if that's what you're going for, then, I mean, you've definitely hit your market.
Yeah, I think even more so interior-wise, you know, it looks a lot sportier inside. And should be pretty neat to see how well it does. It's going to be priced under $20,000, which I think is pretty amazing. And
it's about $3,000 less than a regular Prius.
Yeah,
and gets slightly better fuel economy.
I think overall it should be just a decent small car. You know, forget whether it's hybrid, forget the fact that it gets 50 miles per gallon. It's seems to be a pretty nice small car.
It's very big on the inside for its size. I mean, there's a lot of for a subcompact, and it is a small car. You can put looks like it'll carry a lot. And a guy my size, I'm 6 foot tall. I didn't have any problems sitting in it and getting comfortable.
And as far as technology, it's the same, hybrid synergy drive system that they've had in the Prius, scaled down a little bit, I mm-hmm. guess. And still not lithium-ion batteries, though.
No.
Kind of surprising. I guess they're waiting for the next gen to put those in.
Was one question that was asked. It's been asked in print, and I think it's worth asking again. You know, it's 500 pounds less weight than a regular Prius, has a smaller powertrain. Why isn't the fuel economy a little bit better? Because the city fuel economy is 53, but the highway fuel economy actually drops from the regular Prius to 46. So your combined is 50, which is what the regular Prius is. And I think that isn't a question that I have not heard an answer for. Why wasn't there a little something more? My guess is that Toyota would answer, we made this as a city car, so all of our emphasis was on city, where it gets better fuel economy than the standard Prius. But I think the big kicker is it's $3,000 less, and very, very useful.
But still 50 mm-hmm. miles a gallon.
We were talking on another podcast about, you know, electric cars and so forth. When you can get, you know, hybrids, it still has a gasoline engine in it that are doing 50 miles per gallon, you wonder whether or not pure electrics or even extended range electrics are going to be popular, certainly.
Is the all EV range the same as the regular Prius and the C, or is it the same?
That's a good question. And my guess is, since the battery pack is actually smaller than the regular Prius, but it may be about the same or less, which, as I recall, is about, 1.5 miles?
Yeah, it's not much.
It's not much. Okay, let's move on to a car that for anyone that ever remembers a Buick Skylark, you might be going over to turn off your computer right now. A compact Buick. It is called the Verano. It is based on the Chevrolet Cruze, but let me state right up front, it is not a warmed-over Buick Skylark. It is not purely a badge-engineered Cruze. It is a small Buick sedan that lives up to a lot of the claims that the brand is making right now. As a matter of fact, I think, Brian, you'd confirm this. Some of our staff actually thought it was more attractive than the larger Buick LaCrosse. And I think so. That's saying something.
Yeah, and I'm certainly one of those. I mean, I saw it from across the parking lot, and I did not think it shared anything with the Cruze just by looking at it. And indeed, none of the body panels are the same.
Nor are the powertrains.
Yeah, which is a good call because it did, 2.4 liter?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah, it seemed pretty impressive.
Versus the 2 liter.
Yeah. The interior, I thought, was really good. Material quality is really good. I'd put it on par, if not, again, better than the LaCrosse.
Yeah, I wouldn't go that far personally because I like the LaCrosse so much, but I was pleasantly surprised. When I first heard about the Verano, I'm thinking, and I know some of the folks that are involved with marketing it in General Motors, and I was a little bit hesitant because there really isn't anything much in this class, and they were talking about going up against an Audi A4 and so forth, and I thought maybe that's a stretch. And as it turns out, that is a stretch. This car really is sort of a precursor of what's coming down the pike, where fuel economy standards are going to require everybody to kind of put the kind of luxury and as much space as possible into a somewhat smaller package on, physically, take up less parking space. But there really wasn't too much that they left out of this car as far as interior accoutrements. The back seat's a little tight. But overall, you felt like you were in a modern Buick, and it drove very well. It's very quiet.
Yeah, I'd heard how quiet it was, so maybe I didn't think it was as quiet as mm-hmm. I was expecting. But it did drive very nice, and also no backup cam. It's not even available.
Boy, that surprised
me. Which seems
me.
Weird to me, when you mentioned they didn't leave anything out. I think that's definitely one thing that kind of surprised me. Yeah.
Even with navigation, it didn't have it.
Yeah.
Well, and with the navigation is, other than what we saw in the LaCrosse with the infotainment system, which mm-hmm. I'm still just not a big fan of that. I'd like something that's a little less,
distracting.
Distracting.
I'm sorry, but I think we're all in that boat. A lot of this new whiz bang stuff is,
but
it leaves me cold.
Yeah, but GM has now with the OnStar, but they also have the IntelliLink, which hooks up to your smartphone. Mm-hmm. And I think it just goes that one step further to above the OnStar, which you can connect to your smartphone and really get some good apps that mm-hmm. are safety-wise, traffic-wise, all around mm-hmm. just what's up with your car. It'll tell you what when you need an oil change or when you need to check your tires.
But the apps are the big thing. And I know recently we had a Toyota that had their Intune system in it, which you could do the same thing. And I have to admit, I love Pandora Radio. Mm-hmm. And I listened to Pandora on a long trip. And so I liked being able to call the apps up through the phone.
That's, I think, the next thing that we
It's kind of cheating, though, to make everyone use the smartphone. I mean, what if you don't have a smartphone or
– or you don't want to pay for the data.
Exactly. So – and instead of providing it – instead of them providing the stuff, they're kind of making you do it, which I'm not sure I totally agree with. But back
it
to
could
the
be
Verano,
an age thing, though.
Well, yeah. I'm not sure. I'm kind of a tweener. I'm not really the with the young hip people or the old conservative people, I'm kind of stuck in the middle, so I'll have to deal with that myself. But back to the Verano, do you think that it's going to get them the elusive younger buyer that they're after, or is it going to be people that maybe already have a Buick and like want to downsize, or what do you think?
I think younger is a relative word. The LaCrosse, the Enclave,
especially.
Exactly. All the products they've done so far, Regal, LaCrosse, Enclave, have substantially lowered their median age. Is it still basically over 50? Yes, it is. So I honestly think that this car was probably designed as a second car for a lot of Buick households. Probably bring in a few more people at the bottom end, but I wouldn't be surprised if the biggest appeal for the Verano is actually going to be an overseas market, specifically Asia,
where
Buick is the number one brand in China. And I think they will love this car because they're not married to big cars, and they love Buicks. And this car basically gives them everything they probably expect.
We're going to have to get used to cars not being designed for our market in the coming years, that's for sure.
As long as they make them big enough for six-footers in the front seat anyway. We're going to move now to a car that you've probably been hearing about for at least 2 years, maybe four, the Lexus LFA, their supercar. Over the years, we've had several chances to drive the LFA. All of them have been short-circuited by some car rider before us, wrapping it around a telephone pole or running off a racetrack. So we finally got in an LFA, and it's coming up on and it was an interesting experience, an interesting test. And the question I've got is, was it worth it?
Oh, worth the wait or worth the $375,000?
Either one.
Because they're both different answers. But it was definitely worth the wait. And to even set the story even more, not only has it taken us years to get in the thing, but our chance to drive it came at a Las Vegas Motor Speedway, their outer road course, which I had never been on before. And then literally as soon as we were done with the car, Scott Pruitt, the Lexus race driver, was going to be there to give VIPs – laps in the car. So
they really didn't want you to
exactly,
hurt the car.
Yeah. I'm on a new track in a $375,000 car that, I cannot damage. And here I am. So, but having said that, after a couple laps, I mean, this car is definitely dialed in. It feels incredibly light. Screaming V10, that sounds unlike any Lexus that you could ever even conjure up in your luxury sport car mind. The car just handles insanely well. Probably the only thing I could even think to complain about is the shifting. It's they're called an automated sequential, and it's nowhere near like a PDK or the Ferrari thing.
It is an outrageous looking car, though.
Yeah, and it sounds so insane inside of it. And the brakes, I had about an hour and a half on the track and almost nonstop, pretty much. I ran through an entire tank of fuel in that hour and a half, and never did the brakes show any sign of fading.
They couldn't get you out of the car. You had to run it out of gas.
Yeah, that was pretty much it. just everything about it is right, I would say, except for the brakes. Another thing maybe a little disappointing is it's the same exact nav system and little mouse controller that your neighbor has in her RX, which I think they could have
done
a
special.
Little bit better there.
Yeah.
But the interior is extremely well done. A lot of cool trick things, start button on the wheel, carbon fiber everywhere, including the whole car is basically carbon fiber and plastic. It's
looks
insane.
Like they're going to build another one. They just showed the new concept for it. So,
would you want to drive it anywhere but the track? Or would it be a street car?
It's not as much of a daily driver as some of the exotics out there. But for me, that I would want to drive it on the street even more so because of that, just as a little rite of passage thing. But it has a cool I wasn't aware of the gauges before I was in it. I hadn't really – no one had talked that. It's got like a gauges – it's kind of hard to describe. It's like a thin film transistor.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Gauges, and it's basically just a speedometer and not much else. But then you go into like track mode, and the gauge slides to the right, and this whole –
performance
panel comes up with everything, lap times, G-forces, everything you could ever want. It's like being inside of a race car. It's cool.
Cool car. Well, it was a long time coming. We're glad we finally got a chance to test it. And
$375,000.
You can get that up, make that up out of your pocket change,
right?
It's
still worth it, but for their first attempt at a supercar, I mean, they hit it out of the park, that's for sure.
Okay, we're going to move on now to our lightning round, where we have 2 minutes to debate a topic. Oh. And when you hear the bell, that means we all should finish up. Up! I got ahead of myself.
Finish.
How about we get a nice transition? I forgot. Poor Stephen Chupnik's over here kicking me under
the
table
all this time, waiting for this.
Yeah, waiting for his big moment. So let's give it to him. We'll wait our lightning round. We'll be back to in a couple of minutes. All right. Stephen Chupnik, who has a reputation around our offices for being a guy who can probably get just about anything if he puts his mind to it. And he came up
with – I didn't know where you were going with that.
That was okay.
He came up with this idea of taking a look at how some things we take for granted in this country, like getting a driver's license and even the old car hobby – What are they like in other countries, specifically on the European continent? And so, of all places, he ends up in Finland not too long ago. Matter of fact, I guess it was right before winter.
It was just before.
You stumbled across a group of people who love American iron and good old American hot rods as much as probably anybody here. So, with that set up, it's all yours.
Yeah, there's this group, the Finnish Hot Rod Association, and they've been around for 40 years, actually. And it's men and women. It's about 1,000 now.
1,000 members?
1,000 members.
And for a small country, that's pretty impressive. Yeah.
And they rebuild. They sell them. They restore all American hot rods from the 1920s, 30s, 40s, and even up to the 80s. And it's they have different garages, different places in the country or around Helsinki mainly, just because it's a little warmer down there. Mm-hmm. They drive them on the drag strip. They drive them out on the regular road.
Do they go cruising?
They do. It's an unofficial every Friday in the warmer months that. They drive around the city of Helsinki, and everybody gets out.
That's actually got to be funny to watch.
Yeah, they get dressed in their 1950s and 60s American outfits. Yeah, and
it's like back to the 50s. The big events is held here.
Yeah, but these guys really, when they build them, they use standard American parts. It's
how do they get the cars? Now I know for many years a lot of older American cars went to Europe. They bought them at flea markets. They'd take them apart and ship them as parts. But, I mean, some of the cars that you were talking about actually didn't come directly from the U.S.?
No. Most of it is exactly what you just said. Yeah. Is the country of Finland is very strict on certain requirements. Mm-hmm. Almost all of the insurance rules, you can't have a car that's 90% factory and call it a restored car.
Oh, really? So you have to customize it.
You have to customize it. And
to get around some of the rules.
But basically what they'll do is they'll go over and buy a car, mm-hmm. take it apart, ship it over there if they can get over here to the States, or eBay, internet sites.
I know a guy that works at the port down here in Baltimore, which we get a lot of European cars coming in here in Baltimore. And yeah, he after unloading all the BMWs and Porsches and everything else, Jags, he said he would load up a ton of just old school American iron that was heading back to Europe, and it would break his heart. I mean, he's driving Boss 302s and stuff like that people here would love to have. And just I've been in some of the craziest towns in all over Europe, and you wouldn't believe what you would see over there. You come around a corner, and here comes a '69 Stingray at you, full bore in some town in Germany. So, I mean, there's a lot of that stuff over there.
There is a lot. I can remember being in the south of France once, and we're actually over there many years ago on a Corvette program. And I think we saw as many Corvettes as was in our little fleet of cars going by. I know of the big flea markets, like the big Carlisle flea markets up in Pennsylvania. They have a car corral, and a lot of the buyers there are from overseas, not just Europe, but Asia and Australia.
They actually knew when I was talking, when I said, we're from Maryland, and as you know, it's Pennsylvania, they knew the Carlisle show.
I bet they did.
Yeah.
So what was the most outrageous thing you saw? Can you remember?
There was he didn't even know what the original car was. they put a 500 horsepower engine in that sounded in this tiny little garage. Mm-hmm. I couldn't hear for probably 30 minutes afterwards. It was so loud and it looked like one of these old fashioned carriages, like a Cinderella carriage.
So it was a bucket. Tea bucket or something.
It was a Ford of some kind.
Oh,
that's
a tea
all
bucket.
They knew. Yeah,
yeah, like,
and he loved it. And that
so
was
it was
the
hot rods and street rods,
basically. Yeah, and It's everything.
It just shows you every time somebody gets on the mass media and says that the old car hobby is dead, it's not only alive and well in this country, but obviously there's an awful lot of following around the world. Yeah. So it was a good segment you did. Thanks for taking the trip. I know it was a hardship. Okay, now we're going to get to our two-minute lightning round, and here is our question.
It's a long one.
Once regarded, I better take in some air. Once regarded as the benchmark of value and reliability, Honda finds itself fighting for relevance and market share. Japan's earthquake and tsunami dealt the first blow, followed by a knockout punch from critics and consumers who solidly rejected the new generation Civic. With sales down 7% in the U.S. last year, where did Honda go wrong, and what advice would our esteemed group around this table give them to help turn things around?
Boy, I got a lot to say on this stuff. I mean, I love Honda. And traditionally, I've always loved Honda, but their last few go-rounds have had some issues. And they'll admit it, the new Civic, they've already announced they're redoing it already, coming out very shortly. I know when the Insight came out and the Prius started just pounding it sales-wise, even the Honda's president came out and said that, you know, it's a shame that we couldn't do better than this.
I really think they fell into the trap that used to hurt Detroit automakers. They looked at their market. They saw that their buyers liked what they got and said, well, we're going to give you just a little bit more next time. Meanwhile, you had people like Hyundai and even the domestics like GM and Ford coming out with really amazing new vehicles that pushed a lot of the technologies further.
Yeah, they definitely they need to catch up on technology. They used to be the leaders. They're falling behind now. I think that's a big part of it.
New CR-V, very nice, but so underwhelming compared to a lot of other stuff that's out there.
Underwhelming, and you know, you can't even get push-button start in the thing. Everybody almost has push-button start.
Yeah, I know that a lot of people who some of my friends who they would only buy Honda or Toyota.
Mm-hmm.
And now they say – you know, we're going to go to Hyundai. We're going to look at that or Mazda or one of these other, you know, so maybe they're not ready to go to the American cars. You know, you don't want to
do that.
Well,
they should be because, frankly, most of them are a lot more interesting.
Of course. But, you know, I mean, I think what they need to do.
You have snobby friends.
You know, and some family. But, you know, you really, you know, what they need to do is something like Toyota did with the C, is make it something where even just looks-wise, something looks really
something
different.
Dynamic. Yeah, and I'm not so sure the new we've all seen the concept for the new Accord, which will be out this fall. And the concept looks very good. They showed a coupe version. But we know the production car is not going to be that, you know, gorgeous, I guess is a good word. Or that way out. So we're hoping it will be, but we're not sure.
I don't know about styling. I think it's, again, it's more the technology.
I think it's both.
They got to get back on top of it and be leaders, people that everyone else looks to try to compete with instead of falling behind.
Yeah.
Or a price factor. Make it. Yeah. I don't know if you want to, you know, really, if you really want to compete with a Hyundai or some of these, make it a little bit more reasonable.
I don't know. I'm not sure Honda will do that, nor that I'm not sure it's necessary. They've got a great reputation. It's just their current vehicles aren't very exciting.
Yeah, and then, I don't know, go over time. You know, then they show the NSX, you know, which everyone's been pining over for years. And it looks awesome, and, you know, I'm ready to see how I can afford one. And then they're like, well, it won't be out for another 3 years.
Yeah.
I'm like, well.
It'll be pretty old by then.
I know. Who's going to care? There's going to be a ton of new stuff between now and then.
Thanks, guys. Okay, let's turn now to our Motorweek mailbag. The question comes from Carlton. Carlton writes, I've noticed more and more that cars used to have tinted windshields, and with the dark band at the top, the dark band at the top of tinted windshields is gone, is basically what Carlton's saying. I'm not reading your letter very well, Carlton. Some cars don't seem to even have any overall tint anymore on the windshield. Why have manufacturers stopped the tinting, especially on the windshield? When I first got this question, I wrote back to Carlton saying, you know, the windshields still have some tint. You're right about that band at the top. But I think a lot of the problems that car companies have run into is that there are different laws about tinting in every state. And that may cause an issue. But has anybody else noticed this? I can't say that I have noticed it that much.
Especially the GM used to always have that really blue-looking strip across the top.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what he's talking about, too.
Yeah, all that stuff's gone away. I don't know. I think
a lot of them have the dots now. you know, yeah, the little dots or dots around it.
At night, like the headlights, you can see like the little dots on the windshield. Yeah. I'm not really sure what the reasoning behind it is. I know that I'm not sure that – I always heard that it was – cars with AC had that because it helped keep the interiors cooler.
That's probably true.
Which I think there's a lot of clear solutions they put on windshields right now. Like you mentioned with the dots, you know, there's a lot of UV protection that keeps the interiors cooler without that kind of
tinting.
Stuff.
And yeah, that was primarily what the tinting was for, was to keep the temperature down. And now they've got all sorts of UV reflectors that they put in as layers to the glass that do the same thing and don't obscure your vision.
I think a lot of it does have to do, though, with the legal ramifications in a lot of the states.
That has to be a net part
and
of
I
it.
I think, but some of that is also on the sides as well, that a lot of the states, you know.
Yeah, but increasingly, what I see mostly on the road is cars where you can't see in the side windows, which if I was a policeman, I'd be pretty upset about.
Yeah, I would say more and more, I see more tinting on the sides of vehicles. Especially, you know, almost everybody's got some kind of tint on the rear doors, especially SUVs, rear doors and the back glass. I mean,
and some of the cars we get in have shades for the back windows. So anyway, Carlton, that's our best guess is that it's a combination of new materials making the tent unnecessary and some legal issues. And in your research, if you find out another answer, drop us another line here at Motor Week. And that sort of wraps up our podcast number 68. I want to thank very much the two guys here in the studio with me, our road test producer and two-wheeling reporter, Brian Robinson, and also our over-the-edge reporter, Stephen Chepnick. Before, Stephen, going anywhere else outrageous?
Actually, yes. In the end of this, the end of March 2012, I'll be heading to Virginia Beach to drive.
That's not exactly exotic.
No, but what I'll be driving.
So much more.
Yeah.
What I'll be driving is what the Navy calls an LCAC, which is.
So you're not just going to Virginia Beach. Going to the Navy.
Yes, and I'll be driving.
It's a landing craft.
It's a land craft hovercraft, which it can carry about 13 full size Humvees. Military Humvees. Whoa. So it's not a.
And they're
small,
actually going to let you drive that.
They're actually
going to
let me drive
World War III.
No.
Are you
going to
shoot some guns too or not?
I don't know if it, I don't. I'm, if
don't
they let
tempt
me.
Him. And how about you, Brian? Any two wheeling coming up anytime soon?
Working on trying to get zero electric motorcycle. And some stuff for Moto Guzzi in the works. Nothing firmed up yet. But.
Well, stay tuned. We've got that and a lot more coming up on more editions of Motor Week, which you can see every week on your local public television station. And you can also see us on the HD cable channel Velocity. Meanwhile, I'm John Davis for Motor Week. Our audio engineer this week and every week is Jim Bigwood. Our podcast creator is Bob Mixter. And, of course, the lady with the bell, our producer, Michelle Parker. Join us next time. Until then, be sure to catch Motor Week on your local PBS and Velocity channel. And join us for another podcast real soon.
You've been listening to the podcast of Motor Week, television's original automotive magazine. Motor Week is made possible by RockAuto.com. For additional information on podcasts, videos, and showtimes, visit our website at MotorWeek.org. And watch Motor Week, television's longest-running automotive series, each week on your local PBS station.